That Round and Round Thing. A Gender Swap Hockey RPF Series by X-Man Hater. Read by Bessie Boo. Hockey players make excellent roller derby girls. One, all my heart longs to win. Monday. The problem with roller derby as a sport was that it was full of assholes, as far as Pat could tell. That was the only possible explanation for the way Johnny and the rest of the Blackshawks were laughing at the reveal of Pat's super awesome new derby name at their first practice of the season. Pat pulled out her best wounded puppy eyes and stared sadly at Johnny until most of the laughter was over. Johnny kept smiling smugly, ignoring Pat. Pat decided to ignore Johnny in return and addressed Sharpie indignantly. I don't know why you're laughing! Sharpie could generally be depended on to actually feel sorry for Pat when everyone else was being mean to her. It was the power of their shared name, Pat thought. Sharpie looked like she felt a little bad about the laughter, but it wasn't anywhere near bad enough to appease Pat's hurt feelings. It's just... Sharpie started, then paused for another chuckle. Pat took back every nice thing she'd ever said about Sharpie. She was as big a tool as Johnny. It's just that it is an improvement, but only because Patty Cakes was the worst junior derby name in league history. It was not Sharp Skater, Pat replied scathingly. At the very least, she and Sharpie were tied for worst junior derby name, though she had to admit that. Silently, to herself. Sharpie grabbed Pat in a headlock. You're just sad that you can't have a name as amazing as Great White Sharp, aren't you, Peaks? Pat twisted in Sharpie's arms uselessly. Let me go, loser! Your derby name is dumb and so's your face! I like it, Andy said, giving Pat a little hip nudge as she broke free from Sharpie's hold. It's like a stripper name, but way more badass. Classic roller derby. Thanks, Andy. See, some people understand my brilliance. Pat directed her parting shot at Johnny, then turned to leave the locker room to warm up for practice, letting everyone see the awesome new name on the back of her jersey. Whatever, like Pika Bruiser wasn't the most awesome name in derby history. Ungrateful jerks. She turned the awful nickname she'd been saddled with as a rookie into something cool, and they could all suck it if they didn't like it. Pat was glad she hadn't mentioned her backup name, though, because she was pretty sure Candy Cane Crush would have earned her even more ridicule. So, the 4-1-1 on Pat and roller derby. Roller derby was fucking awesome, and Pat had been skating, on ice and at the regular roller rink, since she was 2 years old. She had met Johnny when they were both 13 and playing on separate teams in the same Derby Brats league. Pat couldn't accurately remember how she and Johnny had overcome the natural rivalry of their teams to become friends, but she could remember exactly the first time she'd seen Johnny, in the locker room before her first bout. Pat had been so excited about finally getting a chance to play in a real bout that she hadn't been able to focus on anything beyond getting her gear on, until Johnny walked into the room and grabbed her immediate attention just by existing. Johnny had been a serious kid, even then, whose ripped fishnets looked as though she'd measured the distance between tears, and whose strategically placed patches on her jacket made Pat want to go over and mess them up, make Johnny look less perfect. Johnny looked back at Pat, and something had flared in her eyes before she told Pat, with her stupid, smug Canadian accent, that her laces were untied and she was going to trip and die that way if she wasn't careful. Pat had been kept from answering, a fact that probably saved their friendship before it even began, by their respective teammates pulling them away from each other and eventually out onto the rink. At the end of their first bout, Johnny was flushed and sweating, but still perfect. Pat wanted to wipe the smirk off her face, even though she was also completely overwhelmed by how good Johnny was, how she'd almost single-handedly won the bout for her team. When they both got picked by the Blackshawks once they were old enough for the adult league, Pat knew that they were going to do amazing things together. But Pat had never really gotten over the urge to mess Johnny up. After practice, Pat let herself get talked into going out with Sharpie and Andy, ostensibly to watch Brenna continue her campaign to get the cute bartender to agree to go out with her. Pat really just wanted to tell Johnny that she was going out with the girls so Johnny wouldn't be able to glare her into forgiveness for Johnny's lack of enthusiasm about her new name. Pat didn't really think someone called Johnny Demonic should be throwing stones, but Johnny would never concede that particular point. When Pat told Johnny about her plans, however, a strange expression flitted across Johnny's face and her mouth turned down. That was new and unexpected, and Pat wasn't quite sure what to make of it. "Are you sure you don't want to come over and watch something instead?" Johnny asked. Her cheeks were still red from skating, and Pat carefully kept her eyes on Johnny's face. Johnny was lethally attractive at the best of times, and when she was still breathing hard from practice and wearing tiny gym shorts, Pat basically had no defenses against her. The only person with thighs as sculpted and distracting as Johnny's was Hillary, but Pat was unreasonable enough about Johnny's everything that she barely noticed Hillary at all anymore. Which was, of course, exactly why Johnny's laughter from earlier still stung. "I've got to give Biscuit my moral support," Pat replied. "She's finally going to ask him tonight, I know it." Johnny huffed a disbelieving laugh, which Pat couldn't really blame her for, since Brenna had been saying she was going to ask the guy out for weeks, and had never actually done it. Her usual excuse was something about how it wasn't wise to try and date the guy who kept her supplied with drinks, but Pat was pretty sure that was a flimsy cover for nerves. Duncan was an actual buddy to the whole team at this point. "You could come with," Pat suggested, because even when she tried, she had trouble staying mad at Johnny. She knew what Johnny's answer would be before Johnny even opened her mouth, though. "I've got an early day at work tomorrow," Johnny said, her voice sounding slightly off. "I guess I'll see you later." "For sure," Pat said, trying to break the weirdness between them. She could count on both hands the number of times Johnny had been tentative about anything, and it felt so wrong that she just blinked helplessly at Johnny and wished she could think of a way to get them back to normal. "Yeah," Johnny said, then went back to her locker. Pat made her escape. The last thing she needed today was to torture herself by deliberately not watching Johnny get dressed right in front of her. At the bar, Abby had secured a booth and was waiting for them. "I'm done being nice," she said to Brenna as soon as they were within hearing range. "You're either going to ask him out tonight, or I'm going to dump beer on you every time you look at him longingly." "What?" Brenna protested. "Come on, I have to work my way up to it." "You've been working your way up to it for a year," Sharpie put in as she sat next to Abby. "I've never seen you hesitate like this." Pat pulled Brenna back before she could slide into the booth. "Go get us the first round," she said, "and don't come back without a date." "See if I keep Neeler from knocking you over 12 times during our next game against the Penguins," Brenna muttered. She went to the bar, though, so Pat was counting that as a victory. Besides, Pat could handle Neeler without any help. Pat sat down next to Andy and turned to watch Brenna's progress. It probably wasn't subtle, the four of them staring holes into Brenna's back, but Pat wasn't about to miss the culmination of many, many drunken nights.
"Oh, I wish we could hear them," Andy said.
"As long as we see it happen, I'll be satisfied," Sharpie said. "You're a brilliant person, Abs." Abby smiled, knocking her shoulder against Sharpie's. "And you don't deserve me?" "Definitely not," Pat said, which earned her twin glares from both Abby and Sharpie. "What?" she protested. "I answered honestly, and if you two want to perform some sort of gross married person flirting, you have a house in which to do that without making the rest of us sick."
"You're just jealous," Andy said.
"You know, because Johnny..." Andy cut herself off abruptly, wincing like she'd been kicked. Pat turned a suspicious look on Sharpie. "Have you been telling the rookies lies about me again?"
"I would never," Sharpie said, hand on her heart.
Abby stifled a giggle, and Pat frowned harder.
"Or let Marion tell the rookies lies about me. Same difference."
Sharpie smiled, the toothy grin that made her current derby name so apt, and shrugged.
"Peaks, I can't be held responsible for what other people tell the rookies. If you want to stop the gossip, you just need to give them the truth."
"The truth is that I am entitled to my privacy," Pat said, turning to make sure Andy got the point.
Andy opened her mouth to protest, but Pat had had enough for one night.
"And if my privacy isn't respected, I will knock some respect into you. Or have Brenna knock some respect into you, whatever."
"I
Andy started, but Abby hushed them all, pointing frantically toward Brenna.
Oh my god, I think she did it!
Abby whispered, and they all turned to watch Brenna. She was leaning against the end of the bar, smiling at Duncan and generally looking pretty happy. This was confirmed when they swapped phones for a moment. Brenna said something as she tucked her phone back into her pocket, and then turned to walk back to the table. Sharpie and Abby slow-clapped her the whole way, which Brenna pretended to ignore.
Nice,
Andy said, holding out her hand for a fist bump. Brenna met it with her own fist, but before she could sit down, Pat stood up and slid out of the booth. I gotta go, she said, letting Brenna take her spot. Some of us have to work tomorrow, and now that my job as moral support is done, I should go home. Sharpie gave her a knowing look, but everyone else just said goodbye, and Pat gave Brenna a congratulatory hug before making her escape. Tuesday. Johnny showed up on Pat's doorstep the next evening with apology beer and sushi from their favorite restaurant. Pat considered forgiving her entirely, but she couldn't let Johnny get away with too much, or she'd get an even bigger ego. Pat felt it was her mission in life to keep Johnny humble, after all. Of course, that was pretty hard to stick to when she was just relieved that Johnny seemed to be over the awkwardness of their last conversation, but she gave it her best shot. You're half forgiven, she said generously. Maybe you can earn the other half by losing miserably at Mario Kart. Johnny shot an unimpressed look at Pat and stepped into Pat's apartment, closing the door behind her. Who said I was apologizing? Your non-microbrew beer? Pat said, as if Johnny didn't know that already. She wouldn't admit it, but she knew it, and she knew Pat knew it, too. Johnny dropped her bundles on the kitchen counter. You want this shitty beer? She asked, a familiar, determined look in her eye, which Pat knew meant that any argument would basically be daring Johnny to decide that they shouldn't be drinking at all on a weeknight. Pat nodded and kept her mouth shut. Then maybe you better shut up about apologies, Johnny said, which really meant, I'm so sorry, Pat, you make my life worth living and your new derby name is the coolest. Well, possibly Johnny would never say the coolest, but the sentiment was still the same. Pat sniffed and handed the bottle opener to Johnny, who opened two beers and gave one to Pat. They clinked their bottles together and split up the sushi onto separate plates before heading to the living room. They ate while watching an awful Discovery Channel documentary on some kind of killer insect, made bearable for Pat only through long-term previous exposure to Johnny's strange viewing habits. They didn't talk about anything important, but that wasn't really the point. The best thing about being Johnny's friend was not having to talk about feelings while simultaneously knowing that she was about 3,000 times better at feelings than Johnny, so Pat let herself forget about making Johnny work for it and just enjoyed being with her. The awkwardness of the day before didn't make an appearance at all. When it got late enough that Johnny started complaining about work the next day, Pat pretended to throw Johnny out for her own good. Johnny went, but turned back with another strange look on her face before Pat could close the door behind her. I do like your name, she mumbled. Pat blinked. That was shockingly honest. Pat watched in fascination as Johnny flushed a blotchy red and patches all over her face.
Johnny! She gasped, a hand over her heart. Did you have a feeling? A positive feeling? About me? Should I call the doctor?
Johnny relaxed at the familiar taunting, her eyebrows scrunching up in mock anger. Whatever, patty cakes. See you tomorrow. Don't call me that, Toes! Johnny gave her the finger before disappearing around the corner, and Pat went inside to call her sisters.
Johnny had had a feeling, and it was a nice one, about Pat, and she told Pat about it directly.
That, plus the odd behavior from last night, clearly required all four of the Kane sisters to figure out, and Pat didn't care that it was currently midnight in Buffalo. Unfortunately, Erica did care that it was midnight.
What the fuck, Patricia?
She growled into the phone. She was much less cool now that she was a grown-up with a grown-up job.
Are you dying? Is Johnny dying? If your answer is anything but yes, you'd better hang up right now.
Pat said. Erica hung up, and Pat resigned herself to obnoxious mass texting until she could talk them all into a Skype call.
Johnny was nice to me? She sent. What does it mean?
Only Jackie had replied before Pat finally made herself go to sleep.
Means it's a fucking day ending in Y, stupid. Go to sleep.
So much for familial bonds. Wednesday.
In the morning, Pat felt much clearer about things as she got ready for work. The problem with being in love with your mostly straight best friend, especially for as long as she'd been in love with Johnny, was that it got hard not to read into every little thing that happened and assign it a meaning that reality couldn't support. Pat didn't always notice herself doing it in time, but she could usually get it corralled quickly enough once she figured out that it was happening. Again. Jess had texted while Pat was in the shower. "Johnny is your best friend. She likes you. It's Stockholm Syndrome, but she likes you. Relax!" "You're my fave, heart," Pat replied, ignoring the Stockholm Syndrome comment. She could always count on Jess to be rational about Johnny, which was good, because she couldn't be rational about Johnny to save her life. This would pass, just like every strange patch in her friendship with Johnny had passed, and they'd be fine. Well, as long as Johnny didn't find someone to date, because Pat could admit to herself that she wasn't ready for that. She had to start preparing herself for it, though. Johnny had been single an unusually long time since her last, final split with TJ, and it probably wouldn't last much longer. With that depressing thought, Pat headed to the hospital. Hopefully, a long day of playing with babies would lift her mood. She was currently doing a rotation in the maternity ward and enjoying it way more than she would have thought. The Black Shocks were going to kick ass this year. They had some great new skaters, and it seemed like they all felt the same surge of momentum and purpose, which made practice that night more of a celebration than usual. Pat felt good about their chances. It had truly sucked to watch the Penguins take the championship last year, and Johnny in particular was determined to get it this year. The Black Shocks hadn't won for 2 years now, which was unacceptable to Johnny, and Pat agreed. She didn't agree that winning required 2 practices a week, but Johnny and Coach Q were a united force that couldn't be broken, so they all showed up every Monday and Wednesday. Wednesday practices were much rowdier than Monday practices, however, because most of the team was on Pat's side and figured that Mondays were enough when it came to serious practicing. The Brandys were currently playing keep away with Andy's helmet, skating around her and laughing, while Marion and Crow were engaged in what looked like a contest to see who could perform the most splits in 5 minutes without taking off their skates. Pat was doing her best to look like she was stretching, but she was also trying to make Sharpie snort water through her nose by telling dirty knock-knock jokes. Johnny and Coach Q were going over the plans for the day in the corner, which was the only reason the rest of them were all getting away with their goofing around. When the conversation was over, Johnny whirled around to face the team, glaring at everyone. "All right, slackers," she yelled. "It's time to get to work. Balling sod, give Shaw back her damn helmet. We're going to run passing drills until someone collapses or you all start behaving, whatever happens first." Brenna shared an affronted look with Pat. They had been behaving for the most part, but Johnny didn't seem to care. She pushed Brenna lightly, shoving her on the track. "Go get in line, Biscuit," she barked. "You gonna yell at me now?" Pat said, smiling brightly. She knew she was being a bit of a brat, but Johnny would probably have a nice, personalized lecture for her, and to be honest, Pat was kind of looking forward to it. Johnny yelling always made her better, and it was soothing, for lack of a better word. Pat was just trying really hard to not even acknowledge to herself that Johnny's lectures kind of turned her on. "You're good, Peaks," Johnny said. "Go skate circles around everyone, eh?" Pat fell flat on her ass in surprise. So much for Johnny being back to normal. Thursday. By the time Thursday rolled around, Pat was well on her way to homicidal. Johnny just wouldn't stop doing things that were making it really hard to remember that they were just friends. She had spent all of the rest of practice the night before complimenting everything Pat did, which was seriously disorienting, not to mention unhelpful. Pat relied on Johnny's critical feedback to point out the blind spots Pat knew she had, and she did the same for Johnny. They'd worked like that ever since their first year with the Black Shocks, and Pat didn't see why Johnny would want to change things now. Then, when Pat's shift was over and she changed into her ratty workout clothes, Johnny showed up outside the hospital to give her a ride to the gym. The last time Pat had asked for a ride anywhere less than 3 miles away, Johnny had said she needed the conditioning and should jog. The gym was only a 20-minute walk, so Pat assumed Johnny must have an ulterior motive for this unprecedented behavior, but she just said, "Don't overwork yourself, we've got a game Saturday," squeezed Pat's knee, and drove off. Pat spent her entire workout feeling a warm, confused glow, like Johnny was still watching her with that proud look on her face that she usually tried to hide from Pat. It really only appeared during games, when Pat flew through the pack with particular grace or managed to avoid a big hit.
That always felt like she hadn't played well unless Johnny looked at her like that, and it was absolutely unfair of Johnny to spring it on her outside of a game. It was worse than the compliments. Pat was going to forget they were just friends at a crucial moment and try to kiss Johnny, and then they'd both be screwed. But what could she say? Stop looking at me like you think I'm great because it makes me want to jump you? Yeah, that would go over well. She just had to force herself to get over this once and for all. But why do you have to get over it? Erica asked after Pat had finished explaining everything to her over the phone on Thursday night. Pat sighed. Because eventually, Johnny is going to start dating someone else, and I'll have to be a good friend and be happy for her. Here's a wild idea, Erica said. Ask her out yourself, dumbass! Pat should have known better than to think that Erica would actually be any real help. Look, Erica continued when Pat didn't say anything. Do you think Johnny would want to at least try dating you? Do I have to bring up the long list of people she's dated in the past, all of whom were men? And the one time she hooked up with a girl and came to practice the next day and said, wasn't really what I wanted? Erica snorted in frustration. Okay, I'm not buying that one subpar night with a chick made her swear off women forever. But even if she didn't want you like that, do you think she'd let your friendship get destroyed over it? No, Pat said slowly. But there's no way to be sure it wouldn't fuck things up. It's too important. She's too important. Which is why she deserves the truth, Patty. Erica sighed. Fine, I can tell I'm not going to get through your thick skull, but when all of this finally blows up in your face, I'm going to call you and laugh for 5 minutes. Gee, thanks, Pat said. I can really feel the love. You want love? Call Mom, Erica said, and hung up. Pat smiled, even though she kind of wanted to strangle Erica. Calling her mom would only result in Pat getting a lecture about not visiting home enough. She could, however, call Jess and Jackie for further opinions. 20 minutes later, Pat went to bed, fervently wishing she'd been born an only child and wondering, again, how it was that all her sisters always seemed to have the exact same view on everything about Pat's life, especially when it came to Johnny. Of course, the bigger question was why Pat kept calling them about Johnny, given all of the above, but that was something Pat would probably never figure out. Friday. On Friday, Pat slept in. She didn't have to go to work again until Sunday night, and she planned to spend the entire day in her pajamas. She made it until about noon before she couldn't sleep any longer and shuffled into the kitchen to make herself toast. When she finished eating and had made her way back to the bed to lounge with a book she'd been meaning to read for a while, she realized her phone had fallen down between her bed and the bedside table. She could hear it vibrating and set her book down to dig for it. She stared in disbelief at the screen when she got the phone in her hand. She had 10 new text messages and an actual voicemail, all from Johnny. Her stomach swooped. Something was seriously wrong. She called Johnny back immediately without reading any of the messages. "Are you okay?" she asked as soon as Johnny picked up. "What's wrong?" "Pat?" Johnny sounded confused but not upset. "What's wrong?" Pat repeated, still panicky. "I just called you back. I didn't read any of your messages yet, but I know you wouldn't leave so many if it wasn't an emergency. Do you need me to do anything?" Johnny let out a shocked laugh. "No, I'm fine. Everything's fine. I'm sorry I freaked you out." "Really? You're not being forced to say that at gunpoint or anything, are you?"
"We need to work on your imagination," Johnny said. "I was just trying to figure out what I should get us for dinner. I'm coming over later."
"The fuck?" Pat said blankly. 10 text messages about dinner?
There was a long silence, which Pat was going to interpret as Johnny being ashamed of herself for scaring the shit out of Pat for no fucking reason. Johnny eventually said. "I wanted to get something you'd like."
And now they were back to Johnny being strange again, because she knew Pat's usual order at over 10 different restaurants and never had any trouble guessing what Pat would want on any given day. They had dinner together at least once a week, and neither of them tended to ask before showing up with food and a movie. Pat honestly couldn't keep up.
"You know what I like," she told Johnny. "I wanted to be sure," Johnny said. Her voice still sounded slightly strangled, not at all like herself. Pat was going to kill her.
"Whatever, asshole," Pat said. "I want dessert, too, and you can figure out what to bring by yourself as your punishment for making me think I was going to have to take you to the hospital or something."
"Okay," Johnny said. "See you at 7. Then she hung up. Jesus Christ, Pat was going to get whiplash from all of this. She dropped her phone back on the floor and went to go see if she still had the yoga DVDs Crow had loaned her. She could definitely use some calm at the moment. When Johnny showed up that night, wearing her fancy jeans and a nice shirt, laden down with takeout bags from at least 3 different places that Pat recognized, Pat sort of lost it for a minute. She carefully took the bags from Johnny and set them down on the ground, then pulled Johnny into a tight, relieved hug. She didn't even have time to feel embarrassed about still being in her pajamas. "I'm glad you're okay, you dumb jerk," she said quietly into Johnny's neck. It took a few seconds, but Johnny hugged her back.
"I'm sorry I scared you," Johnny said, one arm rubbing up and down Pat's back.
"I didn't know you'd immediately jump from 10 text messages to hospitalization, to be fair."
"I work in a hospital, of course I'm going to assume the worst," Pat said. "Just let me hug you, okay?"
Johnny didn't pull away, and Pat let herself pretend, just for a minute, that Johnny was hugging her like this with purpose, that it meant what she so desperately wanted it to mean. She pressed her face into Johnny's shoulder, relaxing into the feel of Johnny's arms around her, the warm, clean scent of her skin. It was perfect, and Pat could barely remember why it was so important that Johnny not ever know how Pat felt about her.
"You've got to stop," Pat mumbled, not lifting her head.
Johnny pulled back abruptly, hands on Pat's shoulders.
"Stop?"
Johnny asked, her eyebrows furrowing in concern.
"Stop what? Are you okay?"
"This," Pat said, waving her hand around vaguely to try and encompass everything about this particular moment. "Being so perfect and smelling good and touching me and looking at me like I matter when I know I can't have you the way I really want."
Johnny's frown deepened.
"You do matter, though.
I know I haven't been that great about showing you, but, Pat, you don't know I...
Johnny stopped, clearly frustrated with herself.
"You do matter," she repeated. "I don't want to stop looking at you like that. You can have me, however you want me."
Pat's ears were buzzing, and she could hardly hear Johnny. She was too focused on the look on Johnny's face, the deep possessiveness and care with a tinge of lust that Pat had never realized was there before. Pat licked her lips, feeling it like an actual touch as Johnny's eyes dipped down to watch the movement. The whole situation felt surreal, as if Pat was watching from a distance as her own hands moved lower on Johnny's waist, pulling her in again. Pat tilted her face up, meeting Johnny's gaze as Johnny finally looked at Pat's eyes instead of her mouth. This was real, Pat thought wildly. It was real, and it was happening, and Johnny was going to kiss her, she could tell. Johnny's eyes were dark and her cheeks were red, which Pat noted only distantly because all of her attention was on Johnny's mouth moving towards hers. Johnny's lips were warm and dry when they finally reached Pat's mouth, tentative in a way that didn't suit her. She didn't need to be tentative. She should know that Pat was already hers in every possible way. Pat parted her own lips, coaxed Johnny closer with her hands on Johnny's back, and put every single bit of pent-up desire she'd been smothering since high school into the kiss. Johnny shuddered under her hands and pressed Pat closer, their bodies molding together. It felt perfect, exactly the way Pat had always imagined. It was better than that, Pat thought. It was real.
"You're so..." Johnny pulled away, breathing hard.
"I'm sorry it took me this long. You're a little shit half the time, but you're mine, and I should have figured out what that meant sooner."
"It so doesn't matter now," Pat said. "I don't give a fuck how long it took. I've got you, and I'm not letting you go."
Johnny's eyes gleamed.
"Good," she said. "Take off your clothes and get to the bedroom. We can eat later."
Pat wasn't really sure how they made it, but she soon found herself in nothing but her pajama pants, staring down at Johnny's fucking amazing breasts, at Johnny's amazing everything, laid out on her bed like a dream come true. She lost herself in sucking Johnny's nipples into her mouth in turn, loving the way she could feel Johnny pushing up against her, pressing their pelvises together in a gorgeous rush of heat.
"Pants,"
Johnny said, shoving Pat's mouth away from her nipples. Get him off me. Pat was reluctant to lose the feeling of Johnny's breasts against her mouth, but she was also conditioned to obey Johnny's orders. It took a few tries, but she and Johnny finally succeeded in pulling Johnny's jeans down and off, and then she got completely distracted by the sight of Johnny's hips, straining under an extremely impractical pair of black lace panties. Johnny didn't own underwear like that. She was always complaining about how hard it was to find decent plain cotton underwear in her size, but here she was, chest heaving on Pat's bed and wearing legitimate lingerie like the most improbable of Pat's fantasies. Johnny flushed even redder under Pat's gaze and refused to meet her eyes.
Are those new? Pat asked without thinking about it.
Johnny said, turning her face into the pillow.
That meant yes, and it also meant that Johnny had gotten them specifically for this. For Pat.
Oh my god, Pat said. She looked up from between Johnny's thighs.
Fuck. Can I touch you? Want to eat you out so bad, Johnny, you don't even know.
Fuck yes, Johnny managed to say. She started to pull down her underwear, and Pat grabbed her hand to stop her.
No, she said. Leave them on for now.
Johnny's whole body shuddered, and she finally looked right at Pat while she spread her legs wider. Whatever she saw in Pat's eyes seemed to give her back a little of her usual confidence, because she smirked and lifted one eyebrow.
Come on, Johnny said. Do it. I want your mouth on me.
Pat didn't waste any more time on banter, just bent her head and licked firmly at Johnny's cunt through the lace, pressing hard with the flat of her tongue as she moved her hands to Johnny's hips, holding Johnny down against the bed. She could smell Johnny's arousal, could feel how wet Johnny already was, and she had to briefly press a hand against her own cunt to relieve some of the pressure, just for a moment. She moved to squeeze one of Johnny's amazing thighs, thinking of all the times she'd wanted to do that before.
I thought about this, Johnny said, her eyes fixed on where Pat was licking her through the lace. Wanted to push you down and ride your face, see if your tongue felt as good as it looked.
Jesus, Pat gasped, suddenly aching for Johnny to do just that.
Okay, she told Johnny, scrambling to pull the lace panties off so she could get her mouth on Johnny as fast as possible.
Licking through the lace had seemed like a good idea at the time, but now Pat couldn't think why she'd been teasing both of them like that when bearskin was an option. Johnny cooperated, but before she let Pat lie all the way down, she tugged at the waist of Pat's pajama pants, smirking at Pat.
It's not fair if you're not naked too, she said. Lose the pants.
Uh-huh, Pat said, shoving them down and off, grateful that she hadn't bothered with underwear. Johnny's breath hitched as her eyes roved over Pat, and she smacked her bare ass while tugging her in for a bruising kiss. Her hands moved up Pat's back and around to her breasts, and Pat gasped and arched into the touch.
You little tramp, Johnny told her affectionately, finally letting her settle down on her back.
Pat smiled as obnoxiously as she knew how, getting herself situated on a pillow and grabbing Johnny's own ass to pull her down.
You love it, she said.
Yeah. Johnny said, just as Pat succeeded in getting her tongue on Johnny's clit.
Fuck.
Pat moaned, reveling in the taste of Johnny in her mouth, working her tongue as steadily as she could. She focused on Johnny's clit, wanting to get her off as fast as possible. The first time, anyway. Johnny pressed a hand down against Pat's neck, sliding it up in a caress as she balanced on her knees over Pat's mouth, her other hand pushed against the wall. Pat pulled back just enough to say, "Take it, babe, come on, I can handle it," before diving back in, hands settled firmly on Johnny's ass to hold her in place.
"Fuck," Johnny said again, her hand clenching reflexively in Pat's hair.
She pushed down, keeping Pat's mouth where she wanted it and rolling her hips in a fast rhythm. Pat kept her tongue against Johnny's clit, moaning almost continuously with how amazing she felt, how fucking hot it was to have Johnny riding her mouth, to let Johnny set the pace. Johnny got steadily wetter, her taste strong in Pat's mouth, and Pat wished she didn't need to breathe and could just stay locked between Johnny's legs forever. In just a few minutes, though, Johnny was choking out something in French as she tightened her grip on Pat's face with her thighs. She pushed into Pat's mouth, her slick sliding all over Pat's face, and then flopped back onto the bed next to Pat, breathing heavily.
Wow,
she said, grabbing at Pat's waist and slapping her weakly in the ass when she could reach. Good work. Pat laughed, wiping a hand over her lips and then sucking two fingers into her mouth. Good enough for some payback? Babe, Johnny said, as soon as I can move, I'm going to wreck you. It won't be very hard, Pat replied, moving to kiss Johnny again. You wreck me just by existing, in case you hadn't noticed. Johnny kissed her back, pulling Pat's legs around her thigh so Pat could grind against it. I noticed, she said, eyes dark and fixed on Pat's mouth. I'm still going to make you come, and then I'm going to keep doing it over and over again until we're both ready to pass out from exhaustion. Pat closed her eyes, focused on the feeling of Johnny's strong thigh, the muscle quivering under her cunt, sending delicious sparks of pleasure through her. This particular scenario had been something she'd thought about frequently when she'd let herself get that far down the path of wanting Johnny. No, no complaints here, she managed to say, and then Johnny made it very difficult for her to think, let alone speak. After they'd gotten through rounds 1 and 2, taken a brief break for dinner, and gone back for rounds 3 through 5, neither of them could stay awake any longer. Johnny tucked Pat in against her body, mouthing along her neck gently. You wreck me too, you know, she whispered. I didn't figure it out very quickly, but you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. Pat smiled and closed her eyes, feeling more content than she'd thought possible just that morning. Yeah, babe, I know. Saturday. Johnny wanted pancakes, and it was pretty hard to argue with her at the best of times, much less when she was in Pat's bed wearing nothing but a pair of Pat's black boy-cut underwear. Johnny's own underwear had been pretty thoroughly ruined by the previous night's activities, and she'd refused to go to bed naked. Now Pat was suffering the consequences of her generosity, because Johnny's ass could not be contained by such a tiny bit of fabric, and it was somehow even more obscene than the lace panties had been. Pancakes, Johnny muttered again, her eyes still closed. She reached out and found Pat's leg, poking at it lazily a few times before yanking the covers up from where she'd kicked them during the night, retreating back under the duvet completely. Her head was the only part of her still visible, and Pat leaned down to kiss her forehead. She was just so fucking cute, and Pat couldn't help it. Fine, Pat said, forcing herself up and out of the bed. Pancakes, but only because I'm an amazing person who is grateful for all the orgasms I got last night. Mm-hmm, Johnny murmured. More where that came from. Pancakes first. Laughing, Pat made her way to the kitchen to start on their breakfast. It wasn't until she dragged Johnny out of bed to eat at the breakfast bar like a good house guest that she remembered the thought she'd had the night before about Johnny's uncharacteristic underwear choice. How Johnny had planned this, had come over specifically to, what, seduce Pat? Those were seduction panties! Johnny stared, which Pat couldn't actually blame her for. She hadn't meant to say that part out loud. Pat said. It's just been bugging me how weird you've been lately, but it's good. I like the seduction. You better have liked it, Johnny said, standing up and placing her empty plate in the sink. She hooked her chin over Pat's shoulder and kissed her neck. I seem to recall you liking it quite a bit. I did, Pat said, pulling away as Johnny's breath tickled her skin. It just kind of explained a lot of your oddness this week, and I didn't really put it all together until now. Johnny pulled back and tugged Pat around until they were facing each other. Yeah, about that, Johnny said. It was pointed out to me that I might have been missing something obvious about you and me. Pointed out by who? Pat interrupted. If those fucking busybodies on their team were going to try to take credit for them getting together, they'd never hear the end of it. David, Johnny said, her cheeks pinking up with embarrassment. Pat's mouth dropped open. Wow, she said. He doesn't have any of my sister's numbers, does he? I feel like we might have just gotten quadruple teamed by nosy siblings. Are you complaining? Johnny asked. She said it lightly, trying to make it a joke, but Pat knew her better than that. Not at all, Pat replied, tucking her fingers into the tight waistband of the underwear. Pat's underwear, fuck. Digging into Johnny's hips. I'm going to buy them all a giant thank you present. Johnny relaxed, smiling as she pulled Pat's hand up to her mouth, sucking the index finger against her tongue. I should give you more to be grateful for then, shouldn't I? Pat wasn't going to argue with that. They didn't have to be at the arena for at least 3 hours, and she had only just begun to think of all the things she and Johnny could do to each other until then. The game that night was beautiful, the best kind of season opener. Pat had a 20-point jam in the first period, and Johnny sent Amanda off the track 3 times with just her booty and got her to cut the track twice. The Switchblades couldn't rally enough to take the lead back after that, no matter how hard they tried. It was the best game Pat had played since the first time they won the championship, and it was made even better by the way she could feel Johnny watching her, even more than usual, and by the heat in Johnny's gaze. That part was new, and Pat loved it. When they finished all the post-game rituals and got cleaned up enough, they headed to the usual post-game bar. Most of the Penguins and Caps were already there, since the Blackhawks match against the Switchblades had been the second bout of the evening. The Blackhawks all gathered together at their usual booth to celebrate their win. Before long, they were joined by Duncan, Abby, and a few other significant others and friends. Pat didn't expect to see many Switchblades tonight, and she was surprised so many Caps were there. After a loss, they all tended to want to lick their wounds privately. "Bets on how long Sid's gonna take before she caves and begs Malkin to fuck her?" Sharpie said, pointing to where Sid was blushing and half-heartedly trying to stop Evgenia from pouring a shot down her throat at the Penguins table. She looked pretty happy with herself, which Pat figured was normal after a win, especially since Sid loved beating the Caps more than any other team. Pat laughed from her position tucked into Johnny's side in the middle of their booth. "No bet," she said. "I think she already has." "Crosby's a shit actor," Brenna protested. "No way could she have hidden it this long." "I'm just saying, neither of them look like people who are still pining for each other," Pat said. "And I know from pining, okay?" She felt Johnny smile at that, and she squeezed Johnny's thigh. "Wait," Duncan said, giving Pat and Johnny both a suspicious look. "Wow, forget Sid and Gino, did this finally happen?" He turned to Brenna and frowned. "Why didn't you tell me?" "What could Biscuit possibly have to tell you about us?" Johnny stared impassively at everyone, while Pat tried and failed to keep a huge smile off her face. She wasn't managing any kind of stealth, but Johnny hopefully knew better than to expect that from her. From the way Johnny kept her arm around Pat's shoulders and didn't tense up, Pat figured it was a safe bet. Sharpie shook her head. "It is hard to tell with these two," she said conspiratorially to Duncan and Brenna. "But I think Peaks is glowing, don't you?" "I am," Pat confessed. "I am glowing all over the fucking place." Johnny smirked, and her face took on the smug look that meant she was extremely pleased with herself. Pat couldn't really fault her for that, though. Pat was pleased with her, too. "I feel cheated," Duncan said. "I've had to watch them get drunk and grab at each other for over a year, and I didn't even get a front row seat to the endgame." Sharpie's grin took on a hint of malicious glee that Pat would have worried about if she hadn't been so happy. "We've all had to watch that, and no one got invited to the show. What a shame." "Recreate it!" Andy yelled to Johnny from the other side of the Brandies, who were both watching with interest. "Show us all how you swept Peaks off her feet!" "That's assuming Johnny was the one who did the sweeping," Marion pointed out. "We don't know that for sure." "We know that for sure," Crow said, which sparked a table-wide argument about who had wooed who. Bolig actually used the word woo, which Pat planned to let her live down, about never. Pat leaned closer into Johnny's solid warmth at her side. "Should we tell them we swept each other, or let them keep fighting?" Johnny snorted. "Let them keep fighting. But for the record, I swept you off your feet harder." "What?" Pat squawked. She shoved away from Johnny and into Brenna, bringing everyone's attention back to them. "The hell you did!" And that was how Pat ended up getting completely wasted on tequila shots in a bartender-referee drinking match against her girlfriend in front of their entire team to prove her sexual-slash-wooing prowess. It was a pretty awesome night. Sunday. The next morning, Pat woke up in Johnny's bed, Johnny's arm firmly wrapped around her waist. Her head was pounding. She thought she vaguely recalled having dipped Johnny into a certified movie kiss while standing on top of their table while Abby cheered. And she definitely been too drunk to make good on any of her threats to make Johnny come so hard she saw stars once they'd been helped from the cab to Johnny's apartment by a long-suffering Brenna and Duncan.
"Urgh," Johnny mumbled into her neck. "Stop thinking, it hurts."
That was a fair enough point, so Pat stopped thinking, grabbed the water bottle that Brenna must have left for them on the bedside table, and forced herself to take the accompanying ibuprofen. She prodded Johnny to do the same, then set her phone alarm for 3 hours later. Eventually, she'd have to get up and go to work. Johnny would probably make them work out harder and longer tomorrow at practice to make up for their partying last night. Pat would have to call her sisters later and sit through all of their Johnny-related gloating. Right now, though, with Johnny mouth-breathing against Pat's ear and making little snuffling noises as she fell back to sleep, Pat felt better than she had in months. It had been a long week, but a pretty fucking perfect one in the end. The end. Two. Get your hands on my hips. The Black Shocks all joke about Brenna and Duncan as if there was never any question that Duncan would be into her, and for the most part, Brenna takes it all with good grace. But she hasn't dated anyone and has barely hooked up for a long time, and she really is out of practice. It's been more than nice these past few days of making out in every free moment they have to know exactly how much Duncan wants her. And how much she wants him. Brenna can't deny responsibility for all the sexting. He's doing his fair share now, but Brenna totally started it. "Seriously, though," Brenna says, using her grip on Duncan's hand to stop his walking for a moment. They're almost back to his apartment in her car, and she doesn't want the night to be over yet. "Thank you for helping me get Pat and Johnny home. That's way above and beyond for a first date." Duncan smirks at her. "See, that's where you're wrong. This isn't our first date. In fact, I'm not sure it can even be called a date when you brought your whole team along." "You liked it, and no, I guess it isn't our first date if you're counting all the times I showed up at your place of work and flirted with you," Brenna says. Which I kind of don't, to be honest. Hitting on someone while they're at work is kind of sketchy. "I liked tonight, and I liked you coming in to flirt with me," Duncan says. "I mean, I agree with you in general, but derby girls in my bar are generally too busy hitting on each other to notice me, and it was nice to get some of that attention." "So if Andy or one of the other single girls had been hitting on you, that would have been just as good?" Brenna's asking pretty facetiously. She's seen Duncan interact with everyone on her team, and it's never been like it is with her. But Duncan decides to answer her by pulling her into an utterly filthy kiss. Brenna opens her mouth and gives back all she's got. "Nah," he says a moment later, voice rough, lips dragging down her throat to the hollow above her clavicle. "Just you." "Mmm," Brenna says, reaching around Duncan's shoulders, running her hands down his back to cup his ass. She likes being his height, likes the way she can reach everything she wants to reach without straining her neck. She kisses him again and presses a knee in between his legs. It's probably too much for how public of a space they're in, but she gets immense satisfaction out of the way she can feel the beginnings of an erection against her thigh. She has big plans for that thing tonight. "Good. Come on, you should take me to your place and show me some moves," she tells him, words whispered directly into his ear. Duncan's hands tighten around her waist, and then he twists out of her grasp, pulling her along behind him. Brenna considers making fun of him, but she's just as desperate to get him naked and finally look and touch her fill. They get inside without any more public indecency, and then they both stop holding back, towing off their shoes immediately. "Fuck," Brenna says, pulling her shirt over her head and letting it fall to the floor. Duncan's doing the same just ahead of her, and she interrupts him to unbutton his jeans as well, making sure to drag her hand against his dick as she pulls them down. He hisses and grabs her hand, sucking two fingers briefly into his mouth before palming her ass through her short skirt. Brenna's cunt pulses with arousal as she watches him, and she retaliates by bending her head to suck on his nipple. Duncan bites back a moan and pulls her hands and head away from him. "I'll let you tease me as much as you fucking want later," he says, tugging on her skirt and trying to move her toward the couch at the same time. "But I'm gonna explode if I can't get my mouth on you right now." Brenna grins, ripping her sports bra off and flinging it aside before pushing her underwear down while Duncan finishes wrestling her skirt down and off. Technically, she says, fighting not to breathe too hard or too loudly. You already got your mouth on me 2 minutes ago. You're fucking hilarious, Duncan says, and pushes her down onto the couch. He spreads her thighs with one giant hand and dives right in, licking between her labia and over her clit. It's good, just the right amount of pressure on her clit. She's been wet for ages, and every pass of his tongue gets her hotter, her slick dripping down her thighs. Jesus, she moans. Harder, and get your fucking fingers in me, now. Duncan lifts his head, and Brenna watches his wet mouth, his whole face shiny with her, from her. She starts moving her hips and scowls. What the fuck does he think now means, anyway? She grabs at his hair, not too hard, but firm enough to get her point across as she pushes his head back to her cunt. He snorts, but goes back down, the flat of his tongue roughly pushing against her clit in rhythmic strokes. Then he finally gets two fingers inside, and Brenna shudders, pushing into it, trying to watch his back muscles moving, but getting distracted by the movement of his fingers instead. Her thighs start to shake, and she plants her feet against the couch cushions and chases the feeling sparking in her clit, orgasm rushing almost too quickly through her whole body when Duncan's fingers twist in just the right way and his tongue keeps up a steady pressure. It's good, so good, and instead of calming her down, it makes her hungrier. She's got at least two more orgasms in her, she decides, and she's gonna get them. Duncan keeps his fingers moving and his mouth on her until she's done, and pawing at him to pull off. Brenna's breathing hard and her hair is sticking up everywhere, like she's just finished a game, and she thoroughly enjoys the way Duncan's watching her as he sits up and presses a hand against his dick, obvious underneath his boxer briefs. Bedroom, Brenna says, and I swear to God, if you don't have a condom, I'm going to murder you. He smiles, slow and devastating, and grabs both her arms to pull her up. His mouth finds her and she cleans him up, sucking in the taste of her cunt and pushing her hips into his. Jesus, he says when they break apart. You're a bossy fucker. You're into it, Brenda says, and prods him toward what she damn well hopes is his bedroom. It is, and she shoves him onto the bed before jumping on herself. Yeah, I am, Duncan says, and Brenna can't remember what she said that he could be replying to, much too busy straddling him to push her cunt against the thick line of his dick, sending sparks up from her clit to her whole body. His boxer briefs are straining around his thighs, and there's a wet spot where his dick is leaking pre-cum. She wants to fucking destroy him. I'm really fucking into it, he says, and, oh, right, he likes her being bossy. Well, in that case, he's in for a good night. She's really sure now about what she wants to do, precisely, and nothing short of him telling her to stop is gonna make her quit now. His hands are on her hips, but he's not trying to control her movements. He's just copying an extended feel, and if Brenna gets any wetter, she's going to float away, so she grabs around in the drawer on his bedside table until she comes up with a single condom. It's not expired, is it? She asks while ripping the wrapper open. Duncan gasps, looking up at her, his fingers clenching and unclenching on her hips as his dick pushes against her slick cunt through his underwear. Nope, he says. Got them... fuck. Got them a few months ago. The rest are under the bed. Brenna pulls away with what she feels is amazing willpower, moving next to Duncan on the bed. Get these things off, she says, tugging at the waistband of his boxer briefs. Less than a minute later, she's smoothing on the condom and straddling him again. She doesn't hesitate. She's soaking wet and relaxed from her first orgasm, and she wants him in her yesterday. It's so, so good. The way Duncan stares at his dick as she slides down onto him. The way she immediately feels better, the ache in her cunt turning into a satisfied pulse of arousal. The way they find their rhythm almost right away. She takes it slow at first, but they can't keep it that way, and pretty soon they're fucking hard and fast. She's been guessing that the sex would be amazing, based on the dirty things he's texted her and their general chemistry, but it's even better than she imagined, and she doesn't give a fuck if she's putting too much pressure on their first time. They're gonna rock this. Duncan's face is damp, sweat beading on his forehead. He wipes a hand across it and then plants his feet firmly against the mattress and shoves up in her, hard, hands on her hips like he's magnetized to them. Brenna lets him drive for a few minutes, tilting her pelvis to help him get the right spot inside her, and she wonders if she can come like this. She never has before, always needs something on her clit, but Duncan's hitting every button she has. Maybe with practice, she thinks to herself, kind of wildly, and then Duncan's hand is on her clit, pushing between her labia and rubbing, almost too much pressure, and she clenches around him.
Just a little bit lighter, she gasps. Oh, God, yeah. Keep it up and I'm gonna fucking come again.
Duncan smiles, and it's not a friendly look. It's a predatory one. You can go after that, can't you? He asks, but it's not really a question. She nods anyway, and he keeps his thumb on the hood of her clit, pressing down in just the right direction, and she comes, this time in a slow burst that ends with her clenching her thighs in against him hard and shoving down onto him in short, shallow thrusts. The way his dick is rubbing against her prolongs everything, and she can feel him shivering under her. Don't you dare come, she hisses, when Duncan looks like he might be about to lose it. I know I'm hot shit, but you promised me another one.
I can wait you out, Duncan says, voice raspy, but sounding cocky and self-assured as he gets his rhythm back. Maybe we can get you to four, eh?
Four. Jesus Christ, the six is going to kill her.
I don't even know if that's possible, Brenna replies.
She's gotten to five before by herself, but that had taken 3 hours and a very expensive vibrator, and she's not sure she can do that again.
We can only try, Duncan says, which makes her laugh, and gives him something to think about as she clenches down on him.
He moves his hands from her hips to her breasts, letting her set the pace again, brushing fingernails against her nipples lightly, just enough to let her feel it. Brenna pulls his left hand up, sucks two fingers into her mouth, and the look on his face almost does her in. He's staring right at her, eyes dark and intense, and it might be scary if she didn't know him as well as she does. As it is, it just leaves her with the burning urge to see him come, third orgasm be damned. Hell, she doesn't need his dick for that, really. Come on, she says, her fingers still in her mouth, tightening up as much as she can around his dick.
I'm gonna... Fuck, Brenna, fuck, oh, fuck.
Duncan moans, hips jerking erratically up as his dick empties into the condom, a surprised look on his face, like he can't believe what's happening. Brenna can feel it, moves her hips with him, trying to make it last and make it as good as possible. It's working, if the slack-jawed look Duncan's sporting is any indication. Brenna hums, keeping her movement steady until she feels him start to soften slightly. She heaves a sigh and lets him slip out, moving to lie next to him on the bed. It takes a few seconds, but he gets his wits back and takes care of the condom. When he looks back at her, Brenna swallows reflexively. He looks just as hungry as he did before he came, and she's suddenly sure that a third orgasm is still in her immediate future.
That was sneaky and underhanded, he complains, turning on his side and putting his whole hand on her vulva, encouraging her thighs to close around his wrist.
And it's not getting you out of this. I keep my promises.
Yeah, you do, Brenna says, chasing the pleasure his hand's giving her, her labia rubbing over her clit and bringing her back to the edge in no time.
Come on, harder. Duncan leans down to bite at her nipples, and she squeezes her thighs together so hard she's slightly worried about his hand, but the thought is gone as soon as she tips over the edge again, at once both sharper and fuzzier than the first two. When it's over, her head's swimming and her thigh muscles are aching, and she's pretty sure that sex with other people has just been completely ruined for her.
She doesn't give a fuck. She's keeping this one, Jesus.
Did I deliver or what? Duncan says, a teasing grin edging onto his face.
You delivered, Brenna replies.
She's way too fucked out to play coy or tease him back. 5 stars, 10 out of 10, etc.
Jesus, I need a breather.
Duncan brushes a hand down her side and she shivers.
Just say when and we can start working on 4, he says, and leans down to kiss her.
Yeah, Brenna's not worried about how much Duncan wants her. She's just worried about ever making it out of bed again.
Stop thinking, Duncan says, nipping at her neck before kissing her deeply again.
Brenna gives in, and pretty soon thinking about anything other than Duncan and what she wants to do to him next is the last thing on her mind. The end.
Three. Girl talk. One.
When Johnny joins the Black Shock, she's determined, mature, and completely unable to take care of herself in any area other than roller derby. Brenna figures this out the day she finds Johnny sitting outside their practice rink, staring at her phone. Their practice has been over for a while, and Brenna had stayed late because she needed to do some extra work on her turns. "What are you still doing here?" she asks Johnny. "I thought you'd left an hour ago." "Oh," Johnny says, startled. Apparently my landlord is actually a slumlord." Brenna stares. "What?" "I got kicked out of my apartment because my building's being condemned, and my roommate doesn't want to find a new place because she's moving in with her boyfriend, and I have absolutely no idea what to do in 1 week to get all my stuff out." Johnny holds her phone and lets Brenna read the email from her leasing agency. "Okay," Brenna says. "Lucky for you, my spare room is currently unoccupied, so if you want to crash with me a little while, you can." "Really?" Johnny stands up. "Are you sure?" "Yeah, of course," Brenna says. "My old roommate moved out a month ago, and I haven't needed to get another one, but it wouldn't be bad to have a little help with the rent." "God, thank you," Johnny says. "My roommate got us this place right after college last year, and I wasn't expecting to have to leave for a while." Brenna nods firmly. "Then it's settled. You can move in whenever you want." The true extent of Johnny's helplessness in non-sports-related fields becomes clear over the course of their first month as roommates. Johnny moves in with a bed, a dresser, a bookshelf, and not much of anything else. She can't cook, she's a bit of a slob, and Brenna catches her bribing Pat to do her laundry more than once. Brenna puts up with this for a little while. Johnny's had a rough month. But she eventually decides that enough is enough. Johnny isn't enthusiastic about learning to deep clean the bathroom and make pasta, but Brenna insists, and Johnny slowly becomes competent in basic adult tasks. Brenna takes this as proof that she's going to make a kick-ass parent someday. And that's the story of how Johnny Taves became Brenna's rookie. 2. "Do you have a minute to talk?" Johnny says one night, near the end of her first season with the Black Shocks. They're walking out to the parking lot after practice, and for once, Johnny isn't following Pat to whatever bar she's designated as their post-practice drinking spot. Brenna can't get a read on Johnny's tone, but she's never going to turn Johnny away, no matter what her mood. "Yeah, sure," she replies. "What's up?" Johnny grimaces. "Could we go home first?" "Sure thing," Brenna says, and hurries Johnny into her car. It takes a while for Johnny to spill, but Brenna waits patiently through several rounds of Mario Kart. "They want me to be the captain next year," Johnny says eventually. "It'll only be my second year on the team, and do you think Sharpie will be upset? She probably should be captain." Brenna hides a grin. The entire team has understood that Johnny would eventually be their captain ever since she started with them. She's bossy and direct, and more importantly, she knows the game and she knows their team. She's incapable of not helping someone out if she sees a way they could improve, and she's already done more for team cohesiveness as a regular team member than some people would as captains. Brenna was sort of expecting it to take a little longer, but she also thinks that Johnny is ready. "Sharpie doesn't have your gift for strategy," Brenna says, and she'd be the first to admit that. "Really?" Johnny asks. She looks so young. "I want to do it, I really do, but..." "Yes," Brenna says, punching Johnny in the shoulder lightly. "You're going to make an amazing captain, rookie." "You can't call me that anymore if I'm going to be your captain," Johnny says, her voice taking on more confidence. Brenna laughs. "That's what you think, rookie." 3. Brenna startles awake on the couch one night when her phone rings, having fallen asleep while watching America's Next Top Model on Netflix. She grabs her phone and answers without looking to see who's calling. "Hello?" she says. "Biscuit!" Pat yells. So it's just that... Did you call her?" Johnny's voice interrupts. "Fuck you, I told you not to call her!" They're both slurring, clearly drunker than they'd normally would be on a Tuesday night. There are some unintelligible words and the sound of Johnny trying to put Pat into a headlock. Brenna sighs. Johnny had moved out into her own place just a few months previous, and was in a phase of trying to prove to herself and everyone else that she didn't need help from anyone, and especially not Brenna. "Pat, are you still there?" she tries. "Look, just tell me where you are, okay?" "Please with your help, bartender! Ow!" Pat manages to say into the phone before Johnny wins the fight and ends the call. Brenna sighs, debates the merits of putting on a bra, and ends up only doing it because the bartender really is hot, and she's busty enough that no bra on her is obvious and not entirely flattering. With a bra firmly in place, and wearing her best sweatpants, Brenna goes to retrieve her rookie, and the hellion her rookie has decided to make her best friend. When she gets to the bar, the hot bartender points her toward a corner, where Johnny is red-faced and listing to the side. Pat isn't much better, trying to hold Johnny up and finish a beer at the same time. They haven't killed each other, though. Brenna's taking that as a win. "What'd you do this time, Peaks?" she asks as she sits down across from them. Pat scowls. "It's not my fault, I swear," she says. She leans across the table and attempts to whisper. In reality, she's not much quieter than she was before.
"TJ problems!"
Brenna shakes her head in amusement. Slightly annoyed amusement, but it's impossible to get truly mad at Pat most of the time. "Go flirt with my hot bartender for a few minutes," she tells Pat.
"But..."
Pat protests, but Brenna puts on her serious face, and Pat climbs out of her chair after patting Johnny's shoulder and does as she's told. "Well?" Brenna says. Johnny puts her face down on the table and groans. "What was that?" Brenna teases. "I'm not fluent in grunting, Johnny. You need to use English."
"I dumped TJ again," Johnny mumbles. "Maybe for good? I don't know."
Privately, very privately, Brenna thinks that this is probably for the best. Long-distance relationships are hard, and Johnny needs someone who's more supportive of her sport, not totally focused on his own. TJ was Johnny's college boyfriend, and Brenna's pretty sure Johnny thinks that failing to make it work with him is a kind of losing. She keeps trying to fix it, but sometimes relationships run their course, and Brenna is old enough to know that's not a failure. That's just life. "I'm sorry you're feeling shitty about it," Brenna says. "Want me to send Pat home and get you even more shit-faced?" Johnny frowns, lifting her head up to glance at Pat, who is following instructions for once in her life and is flirting with Duncan the hot bartender across the room.
"She can stay," Johnny says, and Brenna considers the look on her face carefully.
Maybe Johnny is starting to get a clue about Pat. It's probably best not to push it, though, Brenna decides, and just agrees with Johnny's decision without comment. Brenna goes to the bar and sends Pat back to their table with a tray of shots. Duncan raises his eyebrows at her when she orders another tray right away, but she just grins at him. "Boy trouble," she says, "and more vodka is definitely what we need."
"You don't look like you let boys give you trouble," Duncan says, and starts pouring more shots.
"I don't," Brenna says, winking, and enjoying the way Duncan tracks her mouth as she licks her lips. It's too bad she can't spend more time over here with him. "But I'm responsible for those two tonight."
"Got it," Duncan says. "I'll keep the alcohol coming."
"You're a star," Brenna says, and heads back to the table. Later, when she's pouring two very drunk girls into the back seat of her car so they can go home and sleep it off, Brenna makes plans to nominate herself for sainthood. Next time, she's calling Sharpie and making her come help, too. 4.
"And then she called my brother a douchebag," Johnny says. "David's a jock, yeah, but he's definitely not a fucking douchebag."
Her hands are gripping the arms of her chair so tightly that Brenna's a bit afraid for the integrity of her thrift store chair.
"Have you seen her sisters?" Johnny continues. "Pat is the restrained one of them, for God's sake."
Brenna rubs soothingly at Johnny's back and hopes that Sharpie is having more luck with Pat than she's having with Johnny. Things have mostly been better for the whole team since Pat and Johnny figured their shit out, but their occasional non-roller derby fights have the potential to mess them all up. Sharpie and Brenna are too responsible to leave the kids to stumble through these things without help.
Too responsible for their own goods, Brenna often thinks.
"Do you know what her younger sister asked me the first time I visited Pat's family with her after we got together?" Johnny asks.
Brenna shakes her head, but Johnny doesn't even notice, just keeps talking.
"She asked me how many orgasms I got Pat to the first time we had sex," Johnny says, slumping down onto her arms on the table. "Then she told Pat that I was a party pooper when I wouldn't answer. She did all of this, I might add, in front of their parents."
"Johnny, maybe you should talk about this with..." Brenna begins, but Johnny interrupts before she can finish.
"And when I brought that up, she got mad and started yelling about how I'm not allowed to make fun of her sisters."
Generally speaking, that's a good rule to follow with your significant other, Brenna says.
But she started it!
Johnny says, then appears to actually hear herself and flushes.
It's hard sometimes to know when she's joking and when she's really upset. And half the time, I don't know if my instincts are right. Like, what if I'm treating her like my friend when she wants me to be her girlfriend?
That's something you definitely need to talk to Pat about, Brenna says. And you might want to think about the possibility of you wanting Pat to act like your girlfriend instead of your friend sometimes. Because I think that's really what's bothering you here. Johnny glowers at the table. Maybe. Before Brenna can say anything else, there's a loud knock on her door. Johnny's phone buzzes at the same time, and she looks up at Brenna after checking it.
It's Pat at the door, she says. Don't answer it.
Not a chance, Brenna says, standing up. You're going to fix this right now. Pat is red-eyed and quiet when Brenna opens her front door. Brenna fixes her with a slightly judgmental stare because Johnny is still her first priority.
Can I come in and apologize? Pat asks.
Her voice is hesitant, and it's so strange to hear coming out of her mouth that Brenna relents and squeezes Pat's shoulder.
She loves you, Brenna tells Pat. Come in and tell her that you love her too, okay?
A hint of a smile starts in the corners of Pat's mouth. Yes, ma'am, she says, and heads inside. Johnny's still sitting in Brenna's dining room, closed-mouthed and tense. Brenna stands next to her and nods encouragingly at Pat.
So, Pat says, halting in the doorway. Sharpie says to say that I'm sorry?
Johnny snorts, and Brenna starts edging toward the door. Are you actually sorry for anything? Johnny asks. She's not looking at Pat, concentrating fully on the wall behind Pat's head instead. Brenna watches while Pat twists her hands together. Brenna doesn't want to leave if this is going to turn into another blowout fight, but she's also reluctant to witness any more of Pat and Johnny's relationship than she already has, even if they are in her apartment. The kids deserve a little privacy. She inches further toward the hallway, ready to leave as soon as she thinks it's safe.
I am, Pat says, so quietly that Brenna can barely hear. I'm sorry I took the joke too far.
Johnny finally looks up, and Brenna can see her anger visibly dissipating.
I'm sorry I overreacted, she says. But I don't always know when you're being my girlfriend and when you're being my best friend, and...
Pat kneels down in front of Johnny's chair.
I'm always your girlfriend, she says. I'm just sometimes your girlfriend with poor impulse control and the sense of humor of a 12-year-old boy.
Johnny laughs, pulling Pat up and onto her lap. Yeah, that about covers it, she says, kissing Pat deeply, and Brenna takes that as her cue to leave. No sex in my dining room, she says, laughing internally at the surprised looks Pat and Johnny give her, like they'd forgotten she was even there. I mean it! Brenna heads to her bedroom and puts in earbuds. The chance of Pat and Johnny actually listening to her and going back to one of their own places before they have makeup sex are practically nil. They'll just have to owe her. 5. Okay, here's everything you'll need, Pat says, handing Brenna an actual notebook. It's labeled with, Johnny's a fucking awful patient, but I love her anyway, in thick black marker. Brenna starts to regret her offer to stay with Johnny while Pat's away at a nursing conference. I've got it on Johnny's laptop too, Pat continues, just in case anything happens to the printed version. Brenna raises an eyebrow.
I think we'll manage. You're only going to be gone for a weekend.
Pat sighs and affects what she probably thinks is a mature expression.
Oh, Brenna. Have you ever been solely responsible for Johnny's health and well-being while she's confined to bed rest with a broken leg?
I haven't, Brenna says. But neither had you until 2 weeks ago, and I've been taking care of Johnny ever since I met her. Don't worry. Pat chews on her lip and nods, but she looks nervous. Brenna puts down the notebook and tugs Pat into a hug. Hey, she says. I promise I'll take good care of her for you, peekaboo. Pat blinks away tears, and Brenna doesn't mention them.
Okay, Pat says. I guess I better get going.
Brenna escapes to the bathroom to call Duncan while Pat says her goodbyes to Johnny. She's already witnessed way more PDA from those two than she thinks is reasonable, and she's not counting on one measly broken leg to keep them PG.
She has a notebook,
she says when Duncan answers his phone. It includes a list of approved TV shows and a feeding schedule. I wonder if she thinks Johnny is 2 years old. She is a nurse, Duncan says. That sort of makes sense. In no world does this notebook make sense. Trust me on this, Brenna says. If I weren't such a good friend, I would steal it and bring it to practice next season so that Sharpie could torment them both about it. I would, Duncan says. They deserve it for that time they had sex in the bar bathroom after closing and made me stay late to lock up after them. That's why I'm a better person than you, she says, and pictures the face she knows Duncan must be making right now. It's a good face. Yeah, you are, he says. Do you want me to come over later? If you want to, Brenna replies, but we'll be okay. Famous last words. Less than 2 hours later, Brenna is in a standoff with Johnny over using crutches to hobble her way into the living room instead of being wheeled there in the admittedly ridiculously complicated wheelchair Pat had commandeered from the hospital. Look, the notebook clearly says that you cannot put any pressure on your foot or leg until at least Tuesday, Brenna says. Do you want me to start reading a list of possible complications that could result from early pressure? It starts with internal hemorrhaging and ends with a permanent ban on skating of any kind. Johnny gets a stubborn look on her face, one Brenna is all too familiar with from years of practices and games with Johnny. She's overreacting, Johnny says. She always assumes the worst because she's surrounded by sick and hurt people at work all the time. My doctor said I could probably start using the crutches as early as tomorrow. Brenna sighs and flips to the back of the notebook. She finds the appropriate page and begins reading aloud. If Johnny continues to try and use crutches before Tuesday, she may insist that her doctor said it was okay. Her doctor's exact words were, "You could try to walk on crutches as soon as 2 weeks after the surgery." And now it switches to italics. But it would most likely result in a setback of your recovery and could possibly necessitate additional bed rest at a later date. Then it says, emphasis mine, with Pat's initials. Johnny huffs, but doesn't say anything. Should I continue? Brenna asks. There's a bit about all the sex positions you might never be able to try again if your leg doesn't heal completely. Oh my god, Johnny says. She actually put that in there? Fuck my life. The doorbell rings, and Brenna heaves a sigh of relief. Now that Duncan is here, she can make Johnny submit to being lifted into her chair and taken to the living room, because if she doesn't, Brenna will just have Duncan sit on her. Carefully. Later, when Johnny is in bed again and dosed up on painkillers to help her sleep, she tugs Brenna down to her level. Sorry I was such a brat, she says earnestly, eyes wide and sincere. It's okay, Brenna says. She's still definitely going to remember this the next time Johnny complains about her in any way. Thank you for keeping me from never being able to have sex again, Johnny continues. Or, you know, from dying or whatever. You are very high right now, Brenna says. And instead of taking advantage of it by asking you embarrassing questions, I'm going to go have sex with my boyfriend in your spare room to pay you back for all the times you and Pat slipped away for a quickie in my bathroom during parties. Sounds good, Johnny says through a yawn. Night, Biscuit. Brenna smiles on her way out the door. Good night, Rookie. Plus one. At the start of the new season, Brenna sits in the back of the room with Sharpie as Johnny gives a welcoming speech to their new players. Pat's standing next to her, doing an admirable job of pretending to be an adult. They grow up so fast, Sharpie says, wiping away a fake tear. Brenna snorts. No thanks to you, she tells Sharpie, but she's joking, and Sharpie knows it. We can't all be as responsible as you, Sharpie says. But good work keeping your captain from spontaneously combusting with leadership potential before she could do anything with it. Brenna shoves Sharpie and fights the urge to tear up a little. She finds Johnny at the end of practice, though, and gives her a hug. What was that for? Johnny asks when Brenna pulls back. You did good in there, Brenna says. Johnny smiles. You mean I've come a long way from when I started? She says. Brenna hip-checks her and starts walking to the parking lot. I always knew you could do it, Rookie. The end.